Dave Dockray collects telephones, lots of them, and of all kinds and varieties from the inception of the telephone way, way back. And it's my pleasure to say hi to him on summer nights here on Radio New Zealand National. Hi to you, Dave.
Hello, Chris. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Now, Dave, you must have started collecting telephones quite a while ago.
Well, I did. I was actually a telephone installer when I first started in the...
Now, I wondered that, Dave. Yes.
Yeah. In the telephone industry, but yep. I really wasn't interested that much then because, you know, I mean, you see them every day and you're not quite as interested. You've got a life to lead and you've got kids growing up. I mean, I did squirrel one or two away probably in the 1970s, but it wasn't really until about the mid-1980s that I had more time, probably a bit more money, and I became a bit more interested.
And what was it that really sparked your interest? Because, as you say, you were involved in it, that was your everyday occupation, so I guess it all became quite sort of, you know, straightforward and ordinary for you in a way.
Well, that's right. I mean, the everyday part of it was probably like any career. It's just something that happens every day. But even when I was in my early teens, I was interested in electricity, and I used to fiddle around a lot with electromechanical things. I used to live near an old airstrip that was used during the Second World War, and they had the old igloos, you know, and they had a lot of old gear that they used to dump in these great big holes, and I used to, you know, rummage around in there, and anything that looked like it was interesting, I used to just stick it in my pocket, take it home, and pull it apart and look at it, and a lot of it was quite a bit like telephone equipment.
Yep. Yeah. So that would have been, Second World War vintage stuff?
Yes. Second World War stuff. You know, I was probably digging it up in around about, you know, the mid to late 1950s. And I don't have any of that now. It was probably junk, really, but it was just, that's where a lot of the start to my interest came from, I think.
To the point today, Dave, that how many phones do you think you've actually got?
That's a question that I get asked quite a lot.
Yep.
And it is a bit embarrassing because I don't really know. I don't know exactly. I do know I've got a lot.
It's in the hundreds, though.
It is. I mean, I may have 1,000.
Right.
I've got close to 100 of different types of the candlestick phone. You know, the Elliot Ness, out of the Elliot Ness movies. The upright desk stand. There was a lot of different types of those.
That's where the receiver was on a cradle and you picked it off and held it up to your ear, right?
Yep. Yeah. So, as I say, it's an embarrassing question because I really don't know.
It's become a passion. It must have become a passion because not only do you collect them, you restore them as well. And you do sell them. You don't do it for profit, but you do sell them if people are interested.
I do. That's right. I guess I stumble across a lot that... I don't really want. I have on a number of occasions bought entire collections just to get a few phones, and I've sold off the ones that I didn't want.
Yeah.
And I guess that happens quite a bit with, you know, collectors and collectibles.
Because we're actually talking in the early days, we're talking about some quite magnificent specimens of manufacture, aren't we? They're beautiful pieces of furniture.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I have got some that are pretty special.
What are the ones? Just can you describe them for us?
Oh, I think so. You know, they're pretty desirable ones to a collector and probably quite valuable if I did want to sell them. But one or two of them, to me, have a special value in that I know what their history was. In one case, I was approached by a family who had a very early British Western Electric Eiffel Tower telephone. It's a little bit like the Ericsson skeleton phone. But because it had been used by a member of their family and its history could be traced back in situ before 1900, it actually came out of service in around about 1950, so it was in service for over 50 years, and I know where and when and who used it. So that's important to me. And I've also got one from the 1930s that was actually installed in the local post office on one of our bay islands close to Brisbane. Now, that sort of history or provenance, whatever you want to call it, is a bit hard to get for a phone because they really are consumables. Even though in some cases, historically, they would have stayed in someone's home or a business for close to 50 years. They still were, once they were finished with, they were trashed. So, as I say, you don't very often get that real history.
That's right.
So to me, that's important. To me, that makes them special.
Now, the other one that was even more special, I think, is the one that was in the fire station.
That's the one I was talking about. That
oh,
was
sorry.
Western Electric, yes. Did you read that on my website?
Yes, I did, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one.
I got lost on your website. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one that I was talking about where the family approached me and I ended up buying it from them. But it was actually getting a bit knocked around because it had been, you know, kids had been allowed to use it, and they're extremely rare.
Okay. Now, you also mentioned the Eiffel Tower one. You mentioned the skeletal one as well. Now, what was this one?
That's the Alan Ericsson phone. It was developed in the 1880s by the name of the guy is Lars Magnus Ericsson, and that's where LM Ericsson comes from. It's probably one of the most desirable collectible phones for Australian and New Zealand collectors.
Yep.
Not overly expensive.
When you're saying that, give us a rough idea.
Look, for a good one, you'll pay somewhere between $1,400 and $2,000 Aussie dollars.
Oh, okay, yeah.
But the thing is, they are 100 years old. The reason that, I mean, they are a lovely-looking phone, very pleasing to look at. They worked well. They were easy to use. They were one of the very early ones with a combined handset where you actually, like we do today, lift up the phone and you place the earpiece to your ear and talk into a mouthpiece instead of having that separate earpiece and mouthpiece.
Uh-huh.
So they were very easy to use. They were installed for probably 35 or 40 years in the late 1800s and early 1900s and pretty much all over the world except for the US. I have read that there was almost a million of them made by LM Ericsson.
Gosh. No wonder they're still going today.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was just going to say that. A huge success story for a company starting out. And LME are one of the few companies that started in the late 1800s, and they've continued to manufacture phones ever since. No break at all, no takeovers by other companies. So still very successful. And a lot of it probably could be brought down to their origins.
Yeah, that foundation phone, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, you mentioned they weren't sold in the States. That was because of a patent dispute, wasn't it? That was because there was the Bell telephone as well.
Exactly, yes. There was a lot of that. The French had very different phones, and a lot of it was down to patent disputes. But the Americans are quite parochial as well. I don't think, even now, I think Americans particularly like things that are made in America. Now, I mean, the world's changed a lot. But in those days, Ericsson's, in fact, did sell phones in America. But they changed the name. They called them the Swedish American.
Okay.
They were manufactured in the US, they used parts, but they changed the name, to suit the US buyer, I guess.
When would you say the telephone became a normal part of everyday life, let's say in Australia and New Zealand, or Australia particularly, I guess, before New Zealand would have... Well, they would have developed along the same lines, wouldn't they?
They did, very much so.
Along the same lines, that was a joke I didn't realise.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Very much so. Australia and New Zealand, in terms of telephony, have quite similar histories, and there's probably a lot of reasons for that. Neither country had their own manufacturer, so they had to, find their gear from somewhere else. We're part of the Commonwealth countries, so Australia, New Zealand, and a lot of other Commonwealth countries would have had had equipment from the same supplier.
Okay, yep.
Initially, it would have been the UK and Europe, and also the United States after that. So yes, we do have quite similar telephony histories, not just with the telephone itself, but also our telephone exchange switching equipment, the old manual switchboards that the telephonists would use.
Yes,
a lot of them were very similar in Australia and New Zealand.
And you actually got some of those, haven't you?
I do. Yes.
And again, they're amazing, amazing constructions.
Yeah. They are. Some of them are quite ornate. Some of the very early switchboards, particularly, they're quite ornate. I mean,
yep.
Nowadays we tend to either make really ornate things for decoration or utilitarian for
yes.
everyday use, whereas the early phones and switchboards, they were utilitarian, but they also had, lovely... French polish finishes,
yes.
Very nice timbers, some ornate carvings, all sorts of things like that that made them, to our eyes today, quite lovely pieces, almost pieces of furniture. In those days, that was just the way that things were done.
Yeah. Is there a golden period in the history of the telephone in your view?
Look, I think so. I think there's a couple. We maybe should go back. I missed answering one of your points, but anyway, I think there's a couple. The telephone was patented, I guess, in 1876. Now, it did take a while for it to take off, but once it took off, it really took off. Those first 20 years, say that up until the year 1900, from the patent date of 1876.
Yeah.
To the year 1900, there was an awful lot of changes, an awful lot of improvements. Some of the early phones, they didn't really work well. They were probably only in service for 1 or 2 years before they were bypassed in terms of improvements and developments. And it probably wasn't for maybe 10 years that Alexander Graham Bell and his investors and company colleagues were able to generate enough interest for it actually to take off
okay.
as an everyday item that we might use in a home or in a business. So I think that was one of the golden periods. That first 20 to 25 years, that was when a real lot happened. But I think the second one, and to me it's pretty interesting, because it was after the Bakelite product was invented.
That's the black telephone, is it?
Yes,
yeah.
Primarily the black.
Yeah.
It was invented in early 1907 in Europe. Now, it probably wasn't for another 20 or so years that the Bakelite phone really started to take off, if you like. But what it did was allowed miniaturization and the Bakelite or plastic-type product made the phone a lot more user-friendly. The design, some of the designs that came from those very early 1930s, I think, are probably some of the best of the Art Deco black phones. So to me, that is also a really important period.
Right. So, and then that lasted quite a long time as well, wasn't it? Up to the 50s at least.
There
wasn't
yes.
a huge amount of change in the telephone
not
construction, was there?
No, not at all. For that, there was a huge amount of change in the early days.
Yep.
And once they got to the combined table phone with everything in the one item, well, then it was pretty static, at least for 40 or 50 years. And some of those early Bakelite phones could have been in someone's home for 50 years. You know, by today, by our standards today, that's, you know, bizarre. we don't even think that way. You know, I mean, particularly our mobile phone.
Oh, yeah, throwaway items, yes. Yeah.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, as soon as you renew a contract, you get a new phone. whereas in those days, you know, you got a phone and, you know, grandma used the same phone that mum and dad used and that you've now got in your own home. But, you know, those days have changed a lot. The technology hasn't changed an awful lot, though. Even though our boxes, our phones, look quite different, you know, a huge range of colours and
yes, that's right.
styles that weren't available then.
Thank you, Dave. We'll have to leave it there.